Masechet Shabbat in memory of Marcel and Jack Shasho. Ruach Adonai Tanichim Began Eden. Amen.
Daf Peh. Today's daf is being studied Le'ilu Nishmat Hacham Rafael Muhaddeb Ben Garaz. Ruach Hashem Tanichim Began Eden. Today's daf is being studied Le'ilu Nishmat Hacham Baruch Rafael Ben Miriam and Abraham Ben Esther. Amen. We are starting on the top of Daf Peh, the first line. Actually, it's the last three words on Ayin Tet Amud Bet. Diyo kedeh lichtov. We said on Shabbat that the minimum shi'ud for carrying ink is the amount to write two letters. So the Gemara says, Tana, we have a braita. Shte otiyot bidiyo. Shte otiyot bekolmos, shte otiyot bekalmarin. Which means it does not matter where the ink is. Whether it's dry ink, that's shte otiyot bidyo. Example, you have dry ink, it's the amount of two letters. Shte otiyot bekolmos, or if the ink is in the quill, which means the quill is what they used to write with. So if the quill has stored in it enough ink to write two otiyot, also is considered hayab. Shte otiyot bekalmarin. Or for that matter, if there's enough ink in the kalmarin, would be the inkwell where the ink is stored, also the shur would be two. Now, the she points out that seemingly, what are we discussing the ink over? If you're carrying the quill, you're hayab because you're carrying a quill. Or if you're carrying an inkwell, you're hayab because you're carrying an inkwell. So the she reminds us of a very important opinion that the Gemara is going to say later on, that if you're carrying, let's say, a vessel, and in the vessel there is food, but your purpose is to carry the food, so the vessel becomes insignificant. It becomes batel to the food. To the extent, even if, let's say, in the vessel you have less than a gerogeret of food, which is not the, is less than the minimum amount of hayuvan food. But bottom line, since you're carrying it out for the food, the receptacle becomes insignificant. Hence, in this case over here, we're talking about where a guy's carrying out the kulmos. He doesn't need the kulmos. He's using the kulmos in order to transport the ink. So the ink becomes the item and the kulmos becomes the receptacle, and therefore you're not going to be hayab, not on the kulmos and not on the inkwell. Is a question. Ot achat bidyo, ot achat bekulmos, ot achat bekalmarin. Mahu teku. We know the minimum shiur is two, two otiyot. But let's say it's one letter of dry ink and one letter of ink in the kulmos, or one in the kulmos and one in the kalmeran. Which means we're mixing and matching now. Which means, let's say the two otiyot do not emanate from the same place. Is that going to make a difference? So the Gemara says, Tiku, that we have to write for Eliyahu Navi, which is the Gemara assume that for sure, if it's, let's say, from two kulmusim, or it's from the two inkwells, okay, you can mistaref them. But from different sources, can you mistaref them? The Gemara was not sure. It leaves it in the Tiku for Eliyahu Navi. Amarava, Hotsi Shte Otiyot. A guy removed two letters. Vechatavam Kishu Mealech. And how did he remove them? He was riding them as he was walking, which means, let's say, either on his garment or on a another item, a pad or something like that, that as he was walking, he wrote the letters down on a pad. Hayav. So he's hayav. The question is, I understand there's an akira over here, which means he took the ink out, let's say, into the public domain. But to be hayav, you also need a hanaha. So if a guy, let's say, was in his house, and he took out ink, right now he's walking in the public domain. So then he writes with the ink on the paper. Leave the issue of writing. We know he's hayav also for writing two letters. But we're discussing now the carrying of the ink. So the Gemara says, once he writes the letters down on the paper or the garment, whatever he was writing on, so then he's going to be hayav. So the question is, where is the hanaha? The Gemara says, Ketivatan zuhi anahatan. Hidush, that the writing it on the paper, that becomes the hanaha.
because it's going to stay there. There's a whole issue amongst the Shonim. Are we talking about an area that is 4x4 tefachim or not? Because we learned early in the Masechet that to make a legitimate hanacha, it has to be on something that has a significant shiur. 4x4 tefachim is the minimum. So some of the Shonim say, yeah, indeed, we're talking about over here an area where it's 4x4. Others say, no, since it's destined to stay there for letters, any area would be considered makom hashuv, and therefore you're going to be hayab. So again, this deen was, a guy's walking on a shoot of a beam, he wrote letters down on a certain spot, Kishum Malik, as he was walking. The Hiddush is, even though he is still walking, but the letters now are placed where they're going to be rested, so therefore the letters are considered Munach, even though he is walking. For example, let's say he wrote it on his garment, he wrote two letters, even though he's continue walking, but the letters are now where they're going to be. So the letters, the ketiva, would be considered the hanacha. Next thing, v'amarava, hotzi otahat. Guy, let's say, removed one letter. Yeah, the shiur of one letter. He wrote one letter. V'chatva, and he wrote it. He still got the ink, and he wrote it, let's say. V'chazar, v'hotzi otahat, v'chatva. And then he went out again, and took another letter, ink, to write a letter, and he wrote it, patur. The question is, why should it be patur? Seemingly, if this was in one lapse, which we called he'anim, so he wrote one letter, and then he wrote another letter, but if we're not discussing writing, I should be more clear, we're discussing carrying, meaning he carried one letter from the public domain to the public to the private domain, or the opposite, and he wrote it, and then he carried the yeshirur for the second one, and he wrote it. So bottom line, if it's in one he'anim, he carried two letters, which is the shiur. Why should the Gemara say patur? So Gemara says, "My tama." What's the reason why you patur? Because at the time that you took out the second letter, already you're lacking from the measurement of the first one. Meaning, when you wrote the first letter, let's say immediately there was a shiur over there. But what happens to ink? It dries up. It shrinks. So therefore, by the time you wrote the second letter or brought out the ink for the second letter and wrote it, your first letter was not a letter anymore, because now it was lacking the shiur. So therefore, at the end of the day, you don't have a complete shiur to be hayab. Which is, if you wrote them simultaneously, which means carried them out simultaneously, you wrote them simultaneously with, there was a moment where there was two shiurim, a shiur of two letters, I should say. But here we're talking about you wrote one, right? You took out one, and then you took out another. By the time you wrote the second one, the first one dried up a little. So now at the end you have, you know, instead of two letters, you have 1.9. That's not considered a shiur of chayuv. Next thing, v'amarava, hotzi atzi gerogeret ahat. A guy, let's say, carried half a gerogeret, half a fig's worth of food, v'niha, and he placed it in the shut rabim, let's say. V'chazar v'otzi hatzi gerogeret ahat. Then he went out and took another half fig shiur of food, v'niha. So the Gemara says, Rishona na'ase kemi shekalta kelev o shenisrefa upatur. The first one that you placed down, the first half fig shiur that you placed down, the Gemara says, if we treat it as if it was swallowed by a dog or it got burnt, and therefore by the time you put your second shiur down, the first one is considered non-existent, never going to be patur. Question is why? The Gemara says, V'amai, ha manha. What does that mean? You placed it down and it's there. Which means, what are you making a scenario? It's as if it got swallowed by a dog. It didn't get swallowed by a dog. You placed half a shiur down in the same meal, then you placed the second half of the shiur down. What is this thing over here that it's like it's eaten by a dog? So the Gemara says, Haki Kama. This is what we're talking about. V'im kadam v'igbiya rishona kodem anachat sheniya na'asit rishona kemi shenekleta kelev o shenislefa upatur. Well, we changed the case a little. We're talking where you place the first half and get, or get it down. Correct? Now, before you went and placed the second get, or get it down, you lifted this one up again. By lifting the first one up, it's as if you undid the hanaha. Which means the only time the hanachot are able to be mitzaref is if you placed one half down, then you placed a second half down, and one on the bottom one you placed now a full gerogeret down. So of course you're going to be hayab. But here you did something in between. You placed it down, the first half. And then you went back to that same first half and you lifted it up. No, you didn't put it down again. You just lifted it up, which means you're in your hand now. You didn't undo. No, you know, you didn't undo that. You took it, you put it somewhere where it's not considered hanacha. Which means you undid the hanacha. You were magbiya it, and you didn't maniyah it again. So you cannot rely on that first hanacha that you made. It's as if you have a case where you threw something, the shutan abim. And what happened? A dog came and snatched it and swallowed it. You didn't make hanacha. Or you threw it and a fire came and burnt it. There's no hanacha. So the Gemara says, it's like that case. In what sense? The hanacha that you did is gone. It's not there. Why? Because you lifted it up in between. So therefore, Rava's case was, guy went out to the shutan abim, put half. Before he took the second half to make a hanacha, which would make him hayab, he undid the first hanacha by making hagbaha. Once he made hagbaha, he lifted it up. Then he put the second one out. So now already he's going to be patur. Amar Rava, we have another case of Rava. Hotzi hatzi gerogeret. A guy went out, he took half a gerogeret. V'eniha, and he placed it down. V'hazar v'otzi hatzi gerogeret. And then he went out and took another half a gerogeret. V'avira derech aleha hayav. Interesting case. Here, he took the second half, and he walked over the spot where the first half was, and he just carried it over the spot. Over it. Derech alav. So the question is, v'amai? How could you be a hayav? Hanonah. It didn't rest. What is this deen over here? If a guy just carries half a get or get it over a half a get or get it, it has to rest. So the Gemara says, no, kigod she'avira tok shlosha. No, the Hadush is, we're saying, where it was within three. Now we know a law that if something's within three of the ground, it's considered, we say lavud, it's considered as if it's resting on the ground. Now the Tosafot explains the Hadush over here that, for that matter, why did you have to say you have to put it over the first half? For that matter, within three of the ground anywhere is considered a hanaha. The Gemara went out of its way and said, if you took a half a gerogeret, you put it down. You took a second half a gerogeret, and what? You carried it over the first one. I mean, it works, but even without saying over the first one, for that matter, if you carried it anywhere within three, now it lands, considered landing in the Shutan Abim, you have a full gerogeret munah. So Tosfos says the Hiddush is that in the case where you're doing it over the first tefachim, you don't need three tefachim from the ground. You could judge the three tefachim from the object itself. So therefore, you gain a little room over there because the item is a little off the ground. So therefore, the hadush is you could judge the three tefachim not from the ground, but from the actual heifetz itself. But if you're judging it somewhere else, of course you'd have to judge it from the ground. In any event, the Gemara says, does that work? The rabbis hold that this tok shlosha business doesn't work unless it landed at least on a mashu. So therefore, tok shlosha doesn't work for the rabbis. So that's not the case. So the Gemara says, no, that kashya. When did the rabbi say it doesn't work? There's a famous machloka that we learned between Rabbi Akiva and Hachamim, the law of keluta kemoshihunha, which means, let's say somebody throws an object, okay? So it goes from, let's say, one reshuta yachid to another reshuta yachid with the reshuta rabim in the middle, okay? So now Rabbi Akiva said that when it goes to the airspace of the reshuta rabim, we consider keluta kemoshihunha is as if it lands. That's by throwing an object. Hakamim do not say this. Even if it went within three of the Rishut Rabim, which normally you say Lavud, by throwing, the Hakamim say, you don't go with this business, and therefore you're not going to be Hayab. And I consider it landed in the Rishut Harabim. However, here it's not throwing. Here it's you're walking it through, which means you're passing it through. By passing it through, Hachamim agree, you do say the deen of Lavut. So there's a difference. You're right, you asked the question. Remember, the rabbis don't know this business of three, within three. Yeah, that's by throwing. However, by transferring, by bringing it across, like in this case over here, they do hold it a rule of three, and therefore it does not have to be even on a mashu. It's considered as if it landed, and therefore you're going to be hayaf. Tarudabanan, we have a braita. The Braita says, Hotzi hatzi gerogeret. A guy, let's say, took out a half a gerogeret. Shi'ur. V'chazar v'hotzi hatzi gerogeret. And then he went out within the same I'alim,
to get another half a gerogeret, a food, let's say. Be'alem ahat hayav. No chidush on that din. Right? The same he'alem, two half gerogeret will be mitzaref to the shi'ur. Be'shteh ha'alemot patur. However, if you did it in two lapses, which means you took out the first half to get it, then you remembered it was Shabbat, and then you forgot to get it was Shabbat, and you took out a second half, so the he'alem separates the shi'ur, and therefore you're not going to be hayav. Rabbi Yose Omer, be'alem echad, rishut echad hayav. Leshte rishuyot patur. Rabbi Yose comes to say, even in the case where it's one he'alem, where we're saying that the half shi'urs, mistaref combined, it's only when you took it out to the same reshut. Which means, let's say you went from a reshut to yachid to reshut to rabim, it's got to be the same reshut to rabim. Now what does that mean, it's got to be the same reshut to rabim? Which means he's holding, if it's a different reshut to rabim, we'll see what makes it different, but if it's a different reshut to rabim, so that separates the shi'urim. And therefore you're not going to be hayav. So the Gemara explains, Amar Rabba, Vihu Sheyesh Hayuv Hatat Benehem. What separates the Reshut Rabbim's? If you have a Reshut, a domain, in between the Reshut Rabbim's, that is a Reshut that can be subject to Korban Hatat. For example, a Reshut Yahid. I'll give you a scenario. Imagine you have two homes on the opposite sides of the street. You have a reshut rabim in front of both homes. Okay? However, in the middle, you have a reshut yahid. If you want to see this visually, you could look at the Rashi. They actually have a picture for you over here. Look in your right margin. You see there's a bayit on one side, there's a bayit on the other side. You see there's reshut rabims in front of both homes. Now, we're going to go on our case first. Imagine there's a reshut yahid in the middle. So technically, that reshut yahid has the ability to make the two reshut rabims separate. So therefore, a guy went from the first house and took out half a gerogeret, put it in the reshut rabim. Then he went across the street to the other house, and he put another half a gerogeret in the reshut rabim across the street. Technically, he took a kezayit now, or not a kezayit, a gerogeret, in the reshut rabim. Yeah, but it's separate in the reshut rabims. What separates the reshut rabims? The reshut yahid, which is a biblical reshut, meaning this reshut. If you went from the reshut rabim to the reshut yahid, we have hatat, right? So therefore, that has the ability to separate the two reshut rabims. However, the Gemara says about karmelit lo. But if you have a karmelit, which is a rabbinical domain, in between, that does not have the ability to separate the reshut rabims, and therefore you're going to be hayav. So Gemara says, "Karmelit, no, he doesn't have the ability to separate." Abaye Amar Afilu Karmelit. Even a Karmelit has the ability to separate. So even though it's a rabbinical domain, but imagine there was a Karmelit in between the reshut rabims, it is considered separate, and therefore you're going to be patur. Aval pisla lo, but not a pisla. What is a pisla? So that she tells us. Let's look at that. She divided with a pisla. It's a piece of tree. Shochev lerochbo shel reshut rabim, and it's lying across the entire width of the reshut rabim. That's a big tree. Umemale kol rechabo. It's filling the entire width. Then again, you took half on one side, half on one side. So Abaye says a pisla, even though it's a great impediment, it does not have the ability to separate the reshuyot. Veravamar afilu pisla. He says no. He says, I argue with you on two things. First of all, I argue with you. I say that a karmelit does have the ability to split. And I also say that, I'm sorry, Abin Abbas says, I hold that a Karmelit does not have the ability to split. Because a Karmelit is not a biblical domain, and therefore the Karmelit in between the Reshut Rabims cannot split it, therefore you're going to be Hayah. But I argue with you regarding a Pislah.
I say that this pisla, this piece of wood across the domain, the Reshut HaRabim, that does have the ability to split. Why? So he says, "Behaz the Rabba the Talmud." Rabba's going according to his reasoning. Damar Rabba, Reshut Shabbat, Reshut Gittin Damya. The Reshut of Shabbat follows the Reshut for a get. What's the case of a get? So the Gemara Gittin tells us a case like this. A guy wants to give his wife a get, a divorce paper. The problem is that in order to give a divorce paper, she has to make an acquisition on it. One of the ways she can make an acquisition on it is through her chatzer, which means her courtyard. Meaning whatever falls into her courtyard is considered hers, even if she didn't physically pick up the get. Means to the guy, the husband could throw the get into the courtyard. The chatzer now will be koneh, and therefore the get will be valid. So let's say she doesn't have a chatzer. So the husband could go to the wife and say, "Listen, I'm lending you, or you know, renting out to you, so to speak, a spot in my chatzer that belongs to you." Why is he doing that? Not because he wants to be nice to his wife, because he wants to divorce his wife. So therefore, now that she owns a spot in the chatzer, he could throw the get at that spot. Now already she's kona. So this is what happened. The case was, he gave her a spot in the chatzer. He threw the get in. To his luck, it landed on a pisla in the chatzer. It landed on one of these big pieces of wood. So the Gemara says, it's not a get. Why? Because when a person, let's say, lends out a part of his chatzer, he only lends out one area. He doesn't lend out two areas. So you see what? That the pisla is considered for a get, a separate domain. Which means, if the get lands on the pisla, we don't say, that's the spot. No, pisla is a pisla, and the chaser is a chaser. It's a separate domain. So Rava says, just like you see the inyan get, the pisla is considered a separate entity, so to the inyan Shabbat, if you have this pisla in the Reshut HaRabim, it's going to have the ability to separate between the two Reshut HaRabims, and therefore, if a guy carries on both sides of the Reshut HaRabim, he's going to indeed be Patur. Now the only thing we have to analyze over here, the status of this pisla. So let's look at the Tosafot for a second. Aval pisla lo. So look at Ve'omer Riva. The Mishnah kama tzarik lefaresh acha shur Reshut HaRabim kegon shirabim mechatfim alav, which means, how do you classify this pisla over here? According to Abaye, Abaye is saying it doesn't have the ability to divide. So we must say that this pisla has a din of a Reshut HaRabim. Why? Even though it's an impediment, but it's, remember we learned earlier that certain impediments that are exactly 9 tefahim high, people in the Reshut HaRabim would use it in order to fix their load. It's a perfect size for a guy to use, you know, when they want to fix their load on their back. So therefore, according to Abaye, he'll say, we're talking about a pisla at that size, and therefore it's considered a Reshut HaRabim, in the Reshut HaRabim, even though it's an impediment. He says, the Ikar Melit, because if you're going to tell me it's the measurement of a Karmelit, Ha'amar Abaye Afilu Karmelit. Well, we know that Karmelit has the ability to divide. So for Abaye to say that a pisla doesn't divide, it cannot be a karmelit. Right? Because Abaye said that what? That a karmelit has the ability to split the reshuyot. So pisla, you have to say, he's talking about a reshut harim. How can it be a reshut harabim? So that's the case where the rabim are mechatfim, where they're able to fix, adjust their loads. Verava, right? What does Rava say? Verava damar afilu pisla samar apapish reshut harabim, even though I consider it reshut harabim. So if it's reshut harabim, how can it split? He's going to say, listen, you're right, it's a Reshut HaRabim. But bottom line, since I found by the law of Gittin that it has the ability to be a separate domain, I'm going to say this has a separate domain as well, even though it is considered a Reshut HaRabim. Then he brings a different knowledge. I'll tell you, really, we're talking about a pisla that has the measurements of a Karmelit, which is, let's say, normally the rabbinical domain. So if that's the case, why, according to Abaye, does the pisla not split? Because Abaye said a Karmelit has the ability to split the domains. So he says, Veshani de Abaye bin Karmelit ha-metaltelet ha-metaltelet. He'll make a difference between a movable Karmelit and a regular Karmelit. Which, if it's a regular Karmelit, a regular Reshut, so it's going to have the ability to divide. However, here it's a karmelit, it's a movable karmelit, it's a piece of wood. So therefore, that type of karmelit is going to say does not have the ability to divide. And Rava will tell you, even if it's considered a reshuta rabim, I'm not concerned, it's still going to be considered splitting the two sides. Why? Because we find by Gittin that it has the ability to be considered a separate domain. So again, let's review the case. You had two houses on two sides of the Reshut HaRabim. A guy went on one side and took out half a gerogeret. The guy went to the other house, took out another half a gerogeret. So technically, in one lapse, he took out a full gerogeret in the Reshut HaRabim. The problem is now, do you consider these two Reshut HaRabims on both sides one Reshut HaRabim or two separate ones? Well, if you consider it two separate ones, that even though you did it in one Alem, it's going to be considered Patur. Because it's half and half. However, if you consider it one Reshut HaRabim, one domain, it can be considered Hayav. What is the discerning factor if you consider the two sides of the Reshut HaRabim, one or not, depending what's in between? Everybody will agree if there's a Reshut Yahid in between, Abayed Rabbah, no Mahloket, Reshut Yahid is considered definitely a dividing factor. The Mahloket is going to be, how do you look at a Karmelit? The rabbinical domain, let's say. So according to Rava, he'll say that the Karmeli does not have the ability to divide. If it doesn't have the ability to divide, so if it's considered the same Reshut HaRabim, it's going to be Hayab. Whereas Abaye is going to say Patur, that even a Karmelit has the ability to separate the two Reshut HaRabims. And we have a second Mahlok regarding a Pisla. In that case, Abaye is going to say a Pisla does not divide, and therefore it's considered one, you're going to be Hayab, where Rava is going to say it does divide. Where do you see a Pisla divides? By Gittin, when the guy threw the get in the Hasid that he lent to his wife, and it landed on the Pisla, the Gemara says no get. Why? Because the guy doesn't lend out two areas in his Hasid, he lends out one. And this is considered a separate area. Come to Gemara and continues. Kehol. Kehol would be the mascara, let's say. So what's the shoot of the mascara the lady paints her eyes with? Kedeh lichol ayin achat. In order for her to paint one eye. So the Gemara says, ayin achat, alo kahle. I mean, one eye, the ladies don't put mascara in one eye, they put on both eyes. So what's the shoot one eye? So Amar Avuna, shekin sinuot, kohalot ayin achat. Because the modest ladies, they would go out in the public domain with a veil covering one eye. So they only had one eye showing. So that was the only eye they needed to put on makeup. So that's considered a shiur hashuv. Metibe, we have a question for Rabbi Bishol min Elazar Omer. Kehol, if you're taking out kehol, if you're taking out this mascara, even if you're taking out for medicinal purposes, kedeh lichol ayin achat, then already, even one eye is significant. Even the kashet, bebet ayinayim. But if you're taking it out for cosmetic reasons, so then the shiur is two eyes. So that's going into contradiction with Al-Mishnah. Al-Mishnah said for cosmetic reasons, one eye. When the Bishlam Elazar is saying, two eyes. So the Gemara says, Targema elel bered Rav Shemuel banachmani, ki tanyai bi'iraniyot. That brayta of the Bishlam Elazar is talking about iraniyot. What is iraniyot? Lashi. Benot kefarim. It's talking about the ladies that come from the villages. They don't have to really act in such a sanua modest way. Why? Because there's really not so much levity and people in the kfar. Right? The people are minimal there in the kfar. So they don't have to walk around with their eye covered. They're able to walk in the kfar with their eyes showing, because there's not so much levity in the kefarim. So therefore, when did Rabbi Shimon HaHazar say that if it's cosmetic reasons, the shoot is two eyes? For the ladies in the kefarim. But for the ladies in the city, they have to be more modest because there's many more people there, so they would cover one eye. So therefore, the shoot would be one eye. Now, at this point over here, the Hagota Bach, he just rearranges for us this Gemara. And the Hagota Bach tells us that we should actually read Debek. Go to Debek and we'll come back to Sha'aba. Just want to read it in order. Debek, Kedeh Litem Berosh HaShafshaf. What's the shoot of glue? So he said the shoot of glue is to place on the head of the plank. Now why are you putting glue on a plank? So the Gemara says, Tana, kideli ten berosh, shavshav sheberosh, kanesh yot sayadin. That's at the top of the nest of the trappers, which means guys that trap birds. What would they do? They go up to a high place, and they would place a plank, and they would put glue on the plank. Why? So when the birds come and land on the plank, they get stuck, and that would be a form of trapping them. So therefore, the shiur of glue is the amount that the trapper would place on the piece of wood in order to glue the birds. Zefet v'gofrit. The shiur of zefet and gofrit would be tar and sulfur. Kedeh la'asot. So the Gemara says, Tana, kedeh la'asot nekev katan. If you remember what we learned yesterday, what does it mean, kedeh la'asot nekev katan? That she explained that they used to place mercury in small vessels. And they used to tar the top of it in order to seal it. How did they get the mercury out? They would make a hole in the tar, and they would pour the mercury out. After they finished pouring it out, they would reseal that hole. So therefore, the shi'ud of tar to reseal the hole in the receptacle that's holding the mercury, which is obviously a very tiny amount, that would be the shi'ud that one is going to be hayab. Now go back to Sha'aba in the parenthetical that was above. Sha'aba, kedeh liten al pi nekev katan. The shi'ud of wax is the amount to place on a small hole. Tana kedeh liten al pi nekev katan shel yayin. We're talking about where you have a barrel of wine with this little hole, you need to plug it up. So therefore, the amount of wax to plug up a little hole in the barrel of wine. So that she just tells us why to choose wine. Because he says that wine comes out very fast, as opposed to, let's say, dvash, honey, or oil, which let's say would be thicker, which doesn't come out that much. So that she says, shel yain lemi'utes shel dvash, shayayin zavde nekev katan, yote, which means the hole is much smaller. Which is in a very small hole, the honey cannot ooze out, nor can the oil. But from a small hole, wine can spill out. So they're telling you the shiur, to plug a small hole that the wine is able to escape from in the barrel. So the shiur of wax, again, is minimal. Comes Gemara and says, harasit, kedeh la'asot pikur. Now, we discussed harasit. What was harasit? That was the crushed bricks. So we had a machloket between Hachamim and Rabbi Yehuda and the Mishnah. Let's review that machloket. Hachamim said crushed bricks, the amount to make the pikur. That's the hole that they had in the furnace where they used to stick the bellows in order to fuel the fire or to wind the fire. So therefore, the amount to make this pikur, which sounds like a very minimal amount. The tar they used to cushion the hole. But he's using the harasit now to fashion the hole. So that's like a minimal shi'ur. Rabbi Yehuda came along and said, no, harasit, the shi'ur is in order to make a tripod underneath the kur in order to hold it up. They would place, I'd say, three blocks underneath the kur to raise it off the ground. So it seems Rabbi Yehuda, in this case, is being more lenient, which means he's saying it's a bigger shi'ur. And therefore, until you carry that bigger shi'ur, you're going to be patur. So the Gemara challenges that. The Gemara says, "Lememra the shiura de Rabbi Yehuda nafish." You mean to tell me that the shiura of Rabbi Yehuda is greater than the Hakamim? Ha kai malan the shiura de Rabbanan nafish. We have a understanding that the rabbi's shiur is always the biggest shiur. How do you know? Ditnan, we learned earlier. Rabbi Yehuda omer kedeli toli menu midat min al lekatan. Remember, we had a machloket by a reed, by a kaneh. What was the shiur of a kaneh, of a reed? So the Hakamim said, a reed, in order to make a little hook on a vessel, let's say on the sieve, in order to hang it. That's a small shiur. Where Hakamim gave, I'm going to give you the shiur of the Hakamim. Right. Hakamim said, Parijer Lashon, it was actually the case of Gemi. Gemi is a reed. Kedeh la'asot telai l'napav v'dekabra. Exactly, to place this little loop, that's the word, a loop on the napav v'dekabra to hang it. And the Yehuda said, kedeh li'tom menu midat min'al l'katan. He said, no, the Gemi is even smaller than that. you know, the small measure of a foot of a child that you would use, let's say, to show the shoemaker to make that size. So the Gemara shows you over here that the Biuda is the Mahmir. He's the Biuda gives you the lesser shiur to be Hayab. So the Gemara says, oh, you see over there the Biuda is the Mahmir, and over here you make him the Mekan?
Why not?
So the Ritba asked the obvious question. Okay, in that case over there, he was Mahmir. In this case over here, he's Mekan. Just because you find in one case, and therefore you make a general rule to ask a question, Hakai Malan, we have already a tradition that this is the Miuda, is the Mahmir. So the Ritba answer is very important over here. He says, in all these items that we're discussing in the Mishnayot, for example, the case over here of the Harasit, the crushed brick, or the case over there of the gemi. Both these items have a function that's common and a function that is less common. Now, we had rules earlier regarding a common function and a less common function. Abaye taught us that you go with the common function, lekula, which is you take the common function, the more frequent, let's say, usage in that case. Now, that's a principle. Now, if you find that the Biyuda, in the case of, let's say, the shoe, we have, let's say, a frequent usage, which would mean what? Using it as a loop. And a less frequent usage, what? To use it as the measuring stick for the shoe. And you saw that he gave you a rule already. I go with the strict opinion. So that's a klal already he's given you, which is he forwent the shkiyah, he forwent the frequent usage, and he chose the less frequent. So therefore, that's already your principle. So therefore, you have to be consistent throughout. It's not that we just found one case where he was being ma'amir with a logic. He's saying you take the non-frequent la'amir. So therefore, in this case as well, you have harasit. The most frequent thing you use for the harasit is to make the pikur. There's a less frequent to put it as the tripod. What I mean with that, you committed to that principle that you take the less frequent shi'ud, the umrah. So therefore, what are you doing over here? Now you became the mahmir. Now you're coming along and saying you take the bigger shi'ud. So the Gemara says, fine, we'll make the biyuda the mahmir. How? Gemara says, Ema, 3 lines on the bottom, kedeh lasud pitput kira ketana. Yeah, we're talking about where you have the pitput there ready, you have the tripod there ready, but they cracked. So the shi'ud of harasit, plaster, in order to fix the cracks of the tripod, that's already minimal. So therefore, bottom line, you made the biyuda again the mahmir. Why? Because even though it's a less frequent usage, but bottom line, he goes with the less frequent usage, mahmir, just like he did by the Gemi. We turn to the daf. Tanu Rabbanan. We have a Beraita. Hamutzi Se'ar. If a guy takes out hair, what's the shiur of hair? Kedeh legabel bo et atit. In order to place it in the tar. It seems that they used to make teat. One of the ingredients to give it a good consistency would be hair. So the amount of hair that would be placed in teeth, that's considered the proper shi'ud. Now the Gemara says, teeth, la'asot, pikur, shil surfe zahav. Now what was the shi'ud of teeth? So we said the shi'ud of teeth was the amount to make the pikur, or to cushion the pikur around the oven where they would stick the bellows in. Now regarding this little two lines over here of the Gemara, we have different texts. We have to go through different texts over here. Let's read the Tosafot. The Tap Tosafot. Hamotzi se'ar kedeh legabel bo et atit. Tit kedeh la'asot pikur. Ken garas betosefta vechen garas rashi. Which means, according to the Gersav Tosfot and Rashi, this is all one long statement. And you read the statement, a guy that takes out hair in order to mix into the teat, and the teat is the size of a pikur. It's not two separate statements, it's all one long statement. Ulach girsa se'ar keder legabel bo et atit kishi'ur teat ha'naaseh mirevi'it shofchim. which means, according to this version that we're saying over here, that se'ar, the hair, right? Kedel legabel bo tatit, in order to make the teeth or to add it to the teeth, kishi'ur teet, you have to say it's the measure of teeth. How much teeth is it? Kana'asam ribi'it shofchin. That's, remember we learned earlier, what's the shi'ur of, let's say, water? Dirty water, what's the shi'ur? What do you use dirty water for, the Gemara asks? No, you'll use it to make tar. Which is, we learned earlier that a guy's going to make a certain mixture of tar. After he makes the mixture, then already the shi'ur is much less. Then already he'll use even a little of it to, let's say, stick into the pikur. But the original measure of gibul is a lot. So therefore we're saying over here that the se'ar is what? The shi'ur that you would use in mixing the proportion that you would use a rivi'it of water in, which is the larger shi'ur. We'll continue to Tosafot.
אבל ספרים דגסי שיער כדי לקבל פוטית לעשות פיקור של שורפי זהב.
But according to the text that has it, that the amount of שיער is the amount to put in that small amount. So the question is, what do you mean? You don't make that small amount. So Tosafot will explain, no, we're talking about where you place it in after. Which means you made the full amount. Now you're using this little amount, but the custom was to add hair in it even after. So therefore we have a mahloket exactly what the shi'ur of hair is. In the shi'ur of se'ar, a larger amount, which means the amount that you're making the tar originally, like we said, which needs, which calls for it if you eat of mayim, or we talk about, no, you made the tar already. How much se'ar? In making the pikur, they would add some se'ar in that little shi'ur after, in order to make the teeth better. As a mahlokin, exactly how much se'ar are we talking about? So again, I review the girsa'ot now. According to the girsa'ot to Tosafot, it's like this: Hamosi se'ar keder gabel bo tatit, comma. And what is that? That's the shi'ur of teeth of a rivi'it of ma'im. And teeth and tar, seconding, kedeh la'asot pikur. Once you have it made, then the shi'ur of tar itself is that small shi'ur. But if you have it all as one statement, which would say, se'ar kedeh l'gabel botit la'asot pikur, that's saying it's the shi'ur of a pikur. So therefore you have to say that you made the standard measure, then after when you're taking for the pikul, you would add some se'ar inside. So that's based on the different girsa'ot. We continue. Seed. What is seed? Seed would be lime. Kedel lasut. So we said in order to place on a little child. Tana. Kedel lasut. It's ba'ketana shebebanot. In order to place on the small finger of a ketana of a girl. Again, we're talking about over here, this lime was a depilatory. It would cause the hair to fall off, and it would also, the Gemara is going to tell us, cause a reddening, which is if they wanted their children to have, let's say, a reddish complexion, which was considered, let's say, nice, so they would put this lime. Now the Gemara tells us who would put this lime on. Amar Yehuda Marav, Benot Yisrael Shiyagiu LePirkan. Let's say the Jewish girls that would reach their perek, so that she says, what does it mean they would reach their perek? Which means they reach, let's say, age of puberty, exactly. Velo egiu l'shanim. However, they didn't reach the age yet. So which means they matured early. So that she says it was embarrassing for them to have hair at such a young age. So those girls, they would take this lime and they would remove the hair. So it says, Benot anim toflot otam besid. You know, the girls are from the poor families, they would smear themselves with lime to get the hair off. Benot ashirim toflot otam besolet. The rich girls, they would use solet, certain fine flour that would also be a depilatory. Benot melachim, the princesses, toflot otam beshemen hamor. They would use a special type of oil to take off their hair. It was called Shemen Amor. How do we know that from? Megillat Esther. Shirei Emar. Shisha Chodashim B'Shemen Amor. It says, the girls, before they would go to Ahasuerus, they would spend 6 months, and they would have Shemen Amor treatments. What would the Shemen Amor do? That would clean them up. take off their hairs. The Gemara says, "My Shemen Amor." What is Shemen Amor? Ravuna bar Hiya Amar Satchat. Satchat meaning it's a certain type of perfume. Rav Yirmiya bar Abba Amar Shemen Zayit Shelo Evi Ashlish. Shemen Zayit, it's a type of olive oil that the olives did not grow but a third of their growth. And they take the oil from that olive oil, and it's called Shemen Amor. Tanya Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Anpiknun. What is Anpiknun? Shemen Zayit Shelo Evi Ashlish. It's also Shemen Zayit. Olive oil did not reach a third of its growth. Velama Sechin Oto. Why would they put such a thing on the ladies? Shemashir Et HaSehar. Because it causes the hair to come off. Umehadena Basar. It makes the flesh look beautiful. It gives it a nice complexion. Rabbi Bai Havale Barta. Rabbi Bai had a daughter. Tafla Ever Ever. So he did this process though with the lime, one limb at a time. And the Hakamim tell us that if you do too many limbs at a time, the body temperature of the girl becomes so hot that it can be sakana. So you cannot lime her the whole body. You just do one limb at a time. So Shakal ba dalid me'od zuze. She became so beautiful that people wanted to marry her, they were willing to pay Rabbi Bai 400 zoos in order to marry her. So you see the benefit of this this lime over here, which means it made her look nice. So comes the Gemara and says, Havahu nochri b'shibbuteh. So he had a certain Gentile in his neighborhood. Havyale barta. So he also had a daughter. Tafla b'hadzimna. So he also took the lime out, learning from Rabbi Bai, and he limed the whole body of the girl, his daughter, in one shot. Umeta, and she died. Her body overheated. Amar, so the goy said, Katal Rabbi Bai the Barti. Rabbi Bai killed my daughter. But that really wasn't so, because he didn't follow the exact process that Rabbi Bai did. Eved Eved. He went and put the whole thing in one shot. Amar Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman said, Rabbi Bai deshatu shikhra. In Rabbi Bai's family, it was accustomed to drink a lot of beer. Ba'yan binte tafla. So their daughters needed this this procedure of removing hair, because those that drink beer, it caused them to be hairy. So there was there, Rabbi Bai, he needed this item because they used to drink beer. Anan delo shatina shikhra. But we don't drink beer. We don't have to give our daughters this procedure. Now we explained this Gemara according to Rashi. I just want to explain this Gemara now according to the second Tosafot. We explained which girls would use this. Rashi learns it. It's talking about girls that reach puberty at an early stage. And then when they were embarrassed of their hair, so they would, you know, get rid of it. Took a Tosafot, the second Tosafot. Shegiu lepirkan velo hegiu. Tosfot's says they reached their age or their time, but they didn't reach their time. He doesn't have the word shanim. He doesn't have years in his text. And what does that mean? Pirush besamuk lepirkan shekerobot lehinase. They almost reached the age of marriage. That's what it means. Lepirkan velo hegiu. Since they almost reached marriageable age. And they were doing this process in order to look beautiful. So therefore we have a great mahalok. According to Rashi, they were doing it because they were embarrassed. Because they reached puberty at a young age, so they got rid of the hair. According to this, on the contrary, they were a little older. And now they were going to get married, so this would make them look beautiful in order to get married. Rabbi Yehuda Omer. And the story of Rabbi Bai, by the way, can't fit into Tosfot's understanding. Because it says right after he did the process to her, it says they, you know, were willing to pay 400 zoos. So you see it was like a process done right before marriage. So Tosfot has a, his girsa is in line with the story of Rabbi Bai. Rabbi Yehuda Omer kedelasud chelkul. Okay, now we had a three-way mahloket in the Mishnah, if you remember, regarding this seed. Tanakama said the shiud is what? In order to place on the small limb of a girl. Right? They use it as a depilatory. Then you had Rabbi Yehuda. He said, Kedela sud chilkul. In order to place on a kilkul. So the Gemara says, my chilkul. What is a chilkul? And then we had a third sheet of Rav Nehemia. He said, in order to put on the andifi. So the Gemara says, my andifi. And what is an andifi? What are these last two items? So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Sida u Bat Sida. the temple and underneath the temple. What does it mean? According to Rabbi Yehuda, Chilkul means, as we learned in the Mishnah, they would take this line, a little of it, and use it like as a gel in order to pull the hair above their temple, to pull it back. According to the Rav Nehemya, which is the last Shita, he said they use it for andifi. Andifi would be, let's say, by the sideburns, there would be some little hair that was unwanted. So they would smear a little of the lime by that hair in order to get rid of it. So because you have three Shitot. Hakamim say what? The Shiur to place on the small limb of a girl. According to Rabbi Yehuda, it's Kilkul to place the hair back. According to Rabbi Nehemya, it's the Shiur of andifi to place under the sideburns. It's Batsida. That's under the temple in order to take off some hair. So the Gemara says, Lememra de Shi'urad Rabbi Yehuda Nafish, which means, are you telling me that again Rabbi Yehuda is giving you a bigger Shi'ur? Because compared to Rav Nehemya, his Shi'ur is bigger. Meaning, Rav Nehemya said just to put a little over under the temple. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda is the one that said, Slat, to place the hair back. And we know the rule is what? Hakaimalan de Shi'urad Rabbanan Nafish. We have the tradition that says what? That the rabbi's opinion are the most lenient. And here now, Rabbi Yehuda is giving you a big shi'ud. So the Gemara says, wait. Zuta midrabanan, venafish midrab nehamya. The principle still holds water. You have three opinions in this Mishnah. So indeed, Rabbi Yehuda's opinion is smaller than the rabbi's opinion. Where the rabbis say the amount to place on the limb of a child. That's already, let's say, a big shi'ud. Rabbi Yehuda comes along and says, no, even less than that. Less than that is enough to put your hair back. Okay, but it's smaller than the Nehemya. Because the Nehemya comes along and says, which is larger than the Nehemya. It's large. But the Nehemya is even a small amount of the Adifi. So therefore, in respect to the rabbis, indeed he is Mahmir. We have a contradiction, a question from a Braita. Amar Rav. Nir'in divrei Rabbi Yehuda behabut. V'divrei Rabbi Nehemya bebetzat ha-seed. The Braita comes along and says, Rabbi Yehuda that said that they use this seed for chilkul, we're talking about seed that is habut. What is habut? Dissolved. Which is, it's liquefied seed. Makes sense. How do you place the hair back? Like in a gel. V'divrei Rabbi Nehemya, and the Nehemya that talked about the andifi, bebetzata seed. We're talking about lumps of lime, meaning it's not dissolved. So the Gemara says, how's that possible? If you're learning that chilkul and andifi mean the hair on the temple and beneath the temple, so seemingly they should both be talking about dissolved lime, which is you can't place lumps of lime in order to put it on your face. So how could the Braita tell me we're talking about dissolved, and according to Rav Nehemya we're talking about lumps? No, if we're talking about hair on the temple and above the temple, it should be the same thing. So now we have to redefine our terminologies. El Amar Rav Yitzchak, Amri Debe Rabbi Ami, A'andifa. You know what Rav Nehemya meant? Andifi is not the hair under the temple. A'andifa, as she says, is a earthenware vessel and has two spigots, one on top of the vessel and one on the bottom of the vessel. When you want to fill it up with wine, you need to seal the bottom spigot so the wine doesn't fall out. So therefore, how would they seal it? With lime. So now andipi has nothing to do with taking the hair under the temple. And what type of lime would you use? Lumps of lime. You know that? You can't use dissolved lime to close the spigot. You have to take a lump of it and stick it in there. So the Gemara says, wait. Matkif la rav kahana, v'chi adam osim ma'otav an porot? Is a guy going to forfeit his money? Which is by placing lime in the spigot, what are you doing now? It's going to cause your wine to be ruined. That she says wine, hefsed leshum yain bechli satum besid v'ayam imachaya seed v'yoseh, because the wine is going to cause the seed, the lime that you placed there, to crack. And what's going to end up happening? The wine is going to fall through, and now he's going to lose his wine. I mean, a guy's not going to seal his spigot with lumps of lime. Is the guy going to lose his wine by doing such a thing? So Gemara says, you know what? What is shenatot? So Gemara is going to explain like this. You know what Rabbi Nehemiah said used the lime for? They used to have vessels. They were measuring vessels, like a measuring cup. How did they have measuring cups in the olden days? They would place, let's say, a cup, a vessel, let's say it was made out of earthenware, and they would have protrusions coming out of the side of it. And each protrusion represented a different measure. And in order to make those protrusions evident, they used to paint them with lime in order to make them white, in order that you could see exactly the spot where the protrusion is. So that's what the andifi is. Andifi is the siman that they used to place on these measuring cups in order to know exactly the different spots. So give us kidetnan, like we learned in the Mishnah. Shenato tayu behin. They used to have a vessel in the Beit HaMikdash that was called a hin. It's able to hold 12 lugin. And what did they do with this vessel? They used to make protrusions on the side of it and mark it. Ad kan lapar, ad kan la'ayil, ad kan la'kebes. Which means, if you remember, every animal in the Torah goes with it a certain amount of wine on the Mizbeach. So therefore, if it was a par, you have to bring hatsiyahin. Ushlishitahin la'ayil, a third for the ayil. So therefore, they used to have a vessel. They used to make markers on it, so you know this is for par, this is for a kevis, this is for a an ayah. So you exactly knew the shiurim. So that's one interpretation of andifi. It's the amount of seed that they used to use to mark the measuring. My andifa afuta. What is andifa afuta? Afuta is a forehead. Meaning the ladies used to put the stuff on their forehead in order to make it look reddened and made them look nice. It gave them a nicer complexion. And how do you know the word adifa means a forehead? So the Gemara says, V'chiya da'hu bar galila. There was a certain fellow from the Galilee. De'iklat le'babel. He came to Babel. De'amru le'. So the rabbis told him, Kum derosh lanu b'ma'aseh merkaba. Please get up and give us a derasha on the deep concepts of the chariot of fire of God. That's the chariot in heaven that Yehezkel talked about at length. Only the great Achimim were able to expound on such a concept. So they told the guy from the Galilee, Bechavod, give us a derasha on Ma'aseh Merkava. Amar Lehu, so he said, Edrosh Lechu Ki Yedarish Lebnechamya Lechavre. I'm going to tell you derashot on Ma'aseh Merkava, just like Rav Nehemiah told his friend. It seems Rav Nehemiah, it seems, was an expert in Ma'aseh Merkaba. So he says, I'm going to expound on Ma'aseh Merkaba to you, just to you people, plural, just like Rav Nehemiah did in private. So he says, what ended up happening? He was about to give the derashah. V'nafkat ar'ita min kotel. A hornet came out of the wall. U'machte be'andifi. And bit him in the forehead, umit, and he died. It seems that God punished him because of Nehemiah, when he gave his Hiddush HaMa'aseh Merkaba, did it in private. He now was coming to expound it in public. It seems they didn't want him to. So what did the rabbi say about this guy? From him this happened to him, which means it's his fault. That's a little difficult to understand. But they asked him to say that Hashan Ma'aseh Merkaba, and then after he gets bitten by the hornet, they say he deserved it. So we have to check really the Mefarshim. Seems they set him up, unless they were testing him, unless they wanted him to say, no, Chas v'Shalom, you know, I can't do. They wanted to see who this guy from the Galilee was. They didn't know who he was. Yeah, give us some Ma'aseh Merkaba. All of a sudden, he's going to jump on the opportunity. He said, okay, this guy's not so smart. He should know better not to give the derasha. Matnitin. Adama, what's the shoot of dirt? Adama actually is earth. What's the shoot of earth? Kechotam amartsufim. That's like the sack, that's like the seal that they used to put on the sacks. When the sack is like a cargo, when they used to travel, let's say on the boats, they used to have different cargo, so they needed to seal the sacks so they don't so people don't open them up. So they used to take earth and make a seal out of them. Okay, so the shoot of earth is the amount to make a seal on the sacks of cargo. Devrei Rabbi Akiba, merchandise. Devrei Rabbi Akiba. Vachamim omrim kachotam ha'igrot. Hachamim say no, much less. The amount to make a seal on a letter, on a document, so you don't want anybody to open it up. Zevel, zevel is fertilizer. Vechol adak, and thin sand. Kedel zabel kelach shel keruv. Enough to fertilize one stalk of cabbage. Devrei Rabbi Akiva. Vachamim omrim kedel zabel kirisha. Hachamim say the amount to fertilize one stalk of leek. Chol hagas, thick sand. What's the shiur? Coarse sand. What's the shiur? Kedeliten amalek kafsid. The amount to place on a spoonful of lime. Which you have a smudge, you have a spoonful of lime. How much sand do you add to it? That would be this shiur hashuv. Now we'll see why they would add to it in a second. Kane a reed kedel asot kulmus. A reed, the amount to make a quill. Vimaya ave. But if it was a thick reed. Now, thick reeds they would not use to make kulmosim because it would be too hard to write with it. Or mirusas, or let's say it's a reed that's cracked, well, you also cannot use it to make a kulmos. So the amount of reeds that you would use to fuel if you were trying to make an egg, to cook an egg. What type of egg? Betzah kala, a light egg that gets cooked very quickly. Tirufa, where it's scrambled already, where it's beaten, because if it's beaten, it cooks quicker. Then it to not be fast placed in a pan. So therefore, if it's usable for a kulmos, then the shiur is for a kulmos. If it's not usable for a kulmos, then it's used the amount that's used to fuel a pan that's going to cook in it. The beaten eggs. And the Gemara will explain. Now the Gemara says, Al male kafsid. So we said the shiur of coarse sand is the amount to place on a spoonful or on a spoon of lime. It seems they would add the sand into the lime. So the Gemara says, Tana, kideli ten al pi kav shel sayadin. We're not talking about a regular spoon. We're talking about a trowel that the plasterer is used to use. So therefore it's a bigger shiur. Now the assumption is that if they're adding this coarse sand into the lime, must be it's a point. Must be it has a value to it. Who's the opinion that says it's valuable to stick this sand into the trowel of seed? It's a biudah. Why? Because we have a brayta that says Detanya lo yasud adam et beto besid. A person after the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, the rabbis made certain gezerot. One of the gezerot were that a person cannot now plaster his house with seed, ela imken ahidev boteven ohol, unless you mixed into the seed either straw or sand. Why? Because it seems that the seed was very bright, was very white, it was very nice. So the rabbis didn't want the homes to be so beautiful after the destruction. So they said, you got to ruin it first. How do you ruin it? You put sand in it, now it becomes blackened, and now you can use it. So you see, according to the Achamim, the addition of sand to lime is a negative. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Tevin Mutar, Hol Asur. Which means, he says, you could put tevin into the seed and build your homes after the Beit HaMikdash, but you can't put hol into the lime. Why? Because it causes the lime to become strong. Which means, according to the Biyuda, adding hol to lime is actually beneficial. So who's the opinion of our Mishnah? Must be the Biyuda. Again, our Mishnah said, what's the shiur of hol? The amount that you would add to a trowel of lime. So the Gemara, must be there's a benefit. Who's the Shita that says it's beneficial? Rabbi Yehuda. Because he says that after the Churban Beit HaMikdash, you would not be allowed to add this hol to the mixture. Why? Because it's beneficial to it. What makes it beneficial? It makes it strong. So the Gemara says, Rava Amar Afidu Tema Rabbanan. I can even say the author of Mishnah is the rabbis. Why? Kilkulo Zeu Tikuno. Which means, I can't use lime after the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. Correct? Asur. Why? Because it's very pretty. It's very beautiful. How am I able to make lime viable? By ruining it. Which means add hull into it. Now by being mekalkel, by ruining it, I was actually now metaken, because now it becomes usable. So therefore the Hagamim say kilkuno zeo tikuno, meaning now it's considered shur hashuv, which is a guy living at the time of the destruction of Metamikdash wants to build a house. Can he use lime? No. But Hakamim will say, if you add hull to it, now you can use it. True, you ruined the lime, but by ruining the lime, you made it usable. So there was hashuv. So therefore, that would be considered shur hashuv as well. So whereas Rabbi Yehuda says, no, the actual sand enhances because it makes it strong. The rabbis say, no, the fact that it ruins it, there's an enhancement. Why? Because now you can use it. So therefore, that's considered shur hashuv. And we go one more piece in the Gemara. The Gemara says, kaneh kedei la'asot kulmos. Right? We said the kaneh, the reed, is the shur to make a kulmos, a quill. Tana, kulmos ha-magia l'keshrei esbe'otav. He's not a regular kulmos. It has to reach at least the joints of his fingers. It means a comfortable kulmos. It can't be too small. It has to reach the joints of his fingers. Ba'er ha-vashe, keshir ha-alyon or keshir ha-tachton. Which joint? Which means the middle joint or the top joint? So the Gemara says, Tiku, we have a question. Means, we know it has to reach the joint, but you have different joints of your fingers. The bottom joint of the finger or the top joint of the finger. So therefore, like does it have to reach, let's say, either we're talking about over here, let's say the middle joint, let's say we'll call tachton, and the knuckle maybe you'll consider alyon, or you'll look at the first joint of the finger, because the finger has the three joints. She'll look at the bottom one, closest to the fingernail as the lower joint, and the middle one we consider the upper joint. We want to know what shi'ur does the kulmos have to be. You just told me joints, it's not enough. Tiku, and the other people will answer that. And we go a little further. If it was thick. Okay, then the Gemara went on to tell us that if it was thick or it was cracked, then the only usage of it is going to be what? Fuel. To fuel what?
To cook an egg.
An egg that gets cooked very easily. So it says, Tana, terufa b'shemen, using oil, meaning in the pan you put some oil, that makes it cook a little faster. V'netura b'lfas, in a pan. Amale mor b'ned ravina lebre. So mor b'ned ravina told his son, Misha mi alach betza kala mai. Did you ever hear what type of egg the rabbis were talking about? Because they said betza kala, that's an egg that cooks easily. Did you ever hear what that egg was? Amale bi'ata the silsela. He said, yeah, I heard it to be ata the silsela. That's an egg of a of katan, of a small bird. Maybe a dove?
Just a dove.
Okay, it's a small bird. So he says, my tama. So he says, what's the reason why it cooks fast? Mishum de zutra. Because it's very small. So therefore it cooks fast. So he says, if that's the case, ema de sifreta. His father told him, if you're looking for small eggs, already we have smaller eggs than that. The egg of a sipor, which is even smaller than a dove. So what was his answer? Ishtik. Okay, I don't know. He kept quiet. So Amar le, midi shami alak beha. So now his son asked the father, alright dad, did you hear anything regarding this betzakala? Amar le, achi amar av sheshat, betzat tanegolet. It's the egg of a hen. Umay karu le betzakala. Why do they call it betzakala? Because we know the egg of a hen is not the smallest egg. So why then is it cook so fast? It says shiaru hachamim, because the rabbis made an estimation. The rabbis made an evaluation that what? En lecha betza kada lebashel yoter mebetza tanegolet. Fact be told, no egg cooks as fast as the egg of a hen. Umay shena kol sheone shabbat kegrogeret ve'acha kabetza. Now I'm going to ask one last question. All the shiurim of Shabbat, which means regarding food, whether it's carrying food, or reaping food, or grinding food, all shiurim of food is what? Get or get it. All of a sudden comes over here, what's the shiur of the wood? Of the reed? The amount to cook a betzah. What do you mean? It should say the amount to cook a get or get it. When you jump to Betzah now, Betzah is bigger than a Gerogeret. Right? The Gemara says, what's the shiur of wood? The amount of fuel to cook an egg. Why egg? We should say get or get it. All this shooting regarding food is get or get it.
So the Gemara says, he meant you're
right. The shiur to cook a get or get it size of a betza kala. Meaning you're not cooking the whole betza. Right? A fig size of the egg that's being cooked, which means you have the egg, you crack it into the pan. How much fuel is necessary to cook a fig size of that egg? And that's the truth. So therefore it's consistent. Everything is a get regarding the food. Amen.